Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me is a guy who sees opportunity in any situation. Steve, how you doing?
It's all over, John. Just keep your eyes open. You will find it.
Yep. There's always ups and downs, especially with the FinTech markets. And of course, things are looking a little bit down these days in terms of valuations, fundraising, and business. So a bit of a challenging environment these days for FinTechs.
It is. We have seen, of course, and we'll get into this later, but we've seen how there's been a precipitous decline in funding for fintechs, but also some sad news on the layoff side.
Yeah, right. Chime just announced that they're laying off 12% of their employees. Sorry that's to see you guys go. But they're not the only ones. We've been seeing layoffs for the past few months. Brex, not too long ago, just cut 11% of their staff. And we don't have new information, I think, on their new valuations since they're private. But Chime was at $25 billion at its peak. And I think Brex was somewhere north of $12 billion. But pretty sure the any latest rounds will be much less for them.
Much lower. It's interesting because this is sort of a story that combines, you know, two massive trends, right? It combines the fact that we have seen a softening in the labor market, right? Especially in tech. We've seen how, for example, Google, Meta, Microsoft have all either implemented hiring freezes or have essentially said that they're going to shed a few people. But also we've seen more specifically in the fintech space. And again, we'll get into this later on in the show, but there's been also a precipitous decline in VC funding in the fintech sector.
Yeah, it's really unclear how long this downturn will take. You know, we keep seeing these really positive job numbers, which on the other hand is prompting speculation about the Fed having to raise rates even more to slow things down and get inflation under control. The economy was up for Q3, but it's all these mixed messages. But the impacts are definitely starting to happen already. The layoffs and the slower business, fewer customers and fewer transactions, much less trading for companies like Robinhood, and the impact that then the VCs are definitely pulling back as a result.
Yeah, I mean, there's some lights, some sort of spots of good news in the fintech segment, but I think that also, you know, broadly speaking, it hasn't been very pretty. If you consider crypto a part of the fintech space as well, which I think we do here on the podcast as a policy, then if you take that into account, then it's been a bloodbath, right, for the past 3 or 4 months. It has not been pretty.
Right. Yeah, since May, the markets have been really down for cryptocurrencies. And yeah, you're right. It's been even within the space, there's winners and losers. Coinbase, Robinhood, definitely way negative, and other ones like FTX and Binance doing relatively well. Yeah. But yeah, it was pretty interesting overall picture looking at this new CB Insights FinTech report for Q3. You definitely see the decline in funding on the banking side, down to $1.2 billion in Q3 from a high of $8.3 billion just 1 year ago in Q2 of 2021.
Yeah, we've also seen how it seems like even if you look at it from a regional perspective as well, the U.S. has sort of fallen, whereas Asia and Europe have fallen to a lesser extent. So really, we're seeing the decline in VC funding in fintech mostly in the U.S. and the decline in valuation mostly in the U.S. as well. But there's actually quite a few interesting bright spots too. One of them is that they were able to essentially track the number of deals that a VC has done, and two of the most active VCs were actually CVCs, so they were actually corporate VCs, and they were both so Coinbase Ventures and also Kraken are the ones that actually conducted the most deals last quarter, which is interesting because they're crypto companies maybe looking for some upside in a different part of the market. I don't know whether
invest in the future. Got to think about the long term.
I wonder whether the companies they invested in were actually within the crypto ecosystem. Who knows? But it goes to show that they're the ones who seem to be more desperate to get some sort of upside.
Yeah, and it's a lot of players who you would expect as well. Andreessen Horowitz, who is famously very rah-rah Web3, almost to a fault, as some might say, and Lightspeed Venture Partners, which we always see. But yeah, on the corporate VC side as well, Coinbase, Kraken, FTX, which is in Binance, which was doing really well. And then rounding out the top 10 on the corporate VCs, Samsung, which is kind of interesting to
Oh,
see.
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, Samsung overall as a firm is what I think they said they would lay out like what some $200 billion in R&D and investments in growth over the next few years. This must be part of their investments to keep ahead and keep their fingers in a few pies here and some startups that are of interest to them.
That actually is a really good strategy that even they can even be applied beyond sort of the investment space, right? Because we saw how to sort of switch topics here, how Walmart had invested in a company called Even and a few other smaller players basically, and they were able to deploy some of the Even products for their own customers, and now they're actually going to bolster that by creating one giant entity called One, ONE, that will be focused first on the 1.6 million Walmart employees, and then eventually they will deploy to their customers. But this idea of essentially playing into the market and making small bets and see what can get traction in the market, I think is a really interesting one.
Yeah, it'd be funny to see kind of Walmart swoop in, after these fintechs have been trying new things, and then just someone with just such a massive footprint just to go in and address a lot of the underbanked and unbanked needs through their footprint and through these investments.
What's interesting is that if you look at Walmart, right, they famously are one of the employers in the US that whose employees tend to be most on public assistance. So of course they partnered with a company called Even to provide things like paycheck advance, and now they're getting into broader banking services, right? So I'm assuming some sort of banking product, maybe a checking and savings account. But it seems like they're drinking their own champagne, right? They're seeing the need that they see from their employees, and they may be turning that around for their external customers.
Okay, trivia question. How many Walmart stores in the United States and
Oh God.
potential, also known as potential bank branches?
I would say 500.
Way low. Okay, let me give you a scale here. Chase bank branches in the US. This is a live Google. Chase Bank has 4,700 branches in the US,
Wow.
which is higher than I would have thought. Just to give you an idea of scale, it's along those lines. Walmart has 4,662 stores. So if
So
they flip,
it could be a one-on-one match.
if they flip the switch and make those into bank branches or near bank branches without having to hassle with the license, they're equivalent in at least branch footprint with Chase Bank right off the bat.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. And they actually hired a guy who knows how to do banking, right? Like this guy
That's
banks.
always helpful.
They hired as a CEO of this new entity, again called One, ONE, Omer Ismail, who actually came from Goldman Sachs and who I believe also helped Goldman get into the consumer banking space as well. So he's done this before. I think he also led part of the Marcus team. So they're really bringing in the big guns to do this.
I don't know. That might not be as great on the resume as it used to be. The JP Morgan. With their or no, I'm sorry, Goldman Sachs is kind of reorging and might be pulling out of that whole Marcus and retail strategy. So
Oh,
it
interesting.
might not be the winning look on your resume anymore. You might change your resume if you're Marcus.
All right. In that case, I'm going to actually reframe my statement and say that it's not they're bringing the big guys. They're actually fictitious. This person is just a rat in a sinking ship, and he's just looking for an exit.
Wow, that was a quick turn. I hope you don't characterize my career like
As
that
a
anytime
rat in a
soon.
sinking ship.
Rat on a sinking ship. Well, Marcus, has had kind of like this innovative aura, like it's Goldman Sachs, but it's more agile and different products and consumer focused.
It's
And
cool and
now.
fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I get a Marcus card. But now it might be going away. I mean, Goldman Sachs, it looks like there maybe was some internal battle and the Marcus team lost. So I don't know what's going to become of that just yet. That was announced not too long ago, so we'll see if any of that survives.
Wow. So a more macro question for you, John. What do you think will be the future of consumer fintech, right? Say 3 years from now, once we're out of this weird economic space that we're in now. Do you think we'll see sort of a rebirth in the consumer fintech space, or will the big players just sort of gain the technology, hire all the people, and then just go back to the status quo?
With the big guys again? No, I think I'm going to go with option C. I think the big tech guys over the next few years, closing in on 2030, will have more and more compelling products. And I'm going to go ahead and include Walmart in that group as well. I should say the large, huge corporations that are not banks or fintechs right now will just
Okay.
have more of a say. Walmart could have a big part of that, if they do flip the switch on these and figure out how to go about this. I mean, they're definitely scared. They've been scared off from getting the license themselves, but as we've seen with many other fintechs that have grown very large, you can have a lot of services and get a long way without having that banking license.
You
So
can, right?
I'm going to say
Yeah.
big tech. I'm going to say Google Pay, more Apple.
More Amazon,
Finance
yeah.
products, they just keep rolling out every year or two. They just keep getting more bank-like. Apple just announced that they were going to have like a deposit-like product.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, it's just like little by little they're going to be climbing up. So you add that up over the next few years, people are very loyal with their Apple products. People are very loyal to Walmart. So when they have their products as well, that's going to be, I think, well received, as long as they don't execute poorly or anything like that. The Meta Pay thing will start to take off there. I think they're a little bit early on Metaverse, but as it starts to, the technology catches up, and younger people start kind of like adopt that more as their first interface or one of their first interfaces. I think it's going to get eaten up by these, whatever market share the establishment has, will get eaten up. A lot of it will be from these big players.
So what you're saying is that in addition to controlling essentially all the things that we see on the internet, all the stuff that we buy, right? All the commerce at a retail level, now all these big players will actually also own our financial lives.
Walmart owns something called One. We're going to all hail the One.
Oh, hell the one. Oh, hell the
I
one.
have
You
the
know,
one.
you
And
know,
it's
one
going to
lar
be printed on, you're going to have a barcode or a QR code on your palm. You're going to wave over, I am one.
Oh,
I'm part of
man.
the one.
My crazy uncle would love you.
Yeah.
You
We
know,
probably have a lot in common.
one, yeah, exactly. One company that actually that we haven't talked about yet, but that could get into the payment space specifically is actually Twitter, right? Because I believe that a lot of what came out during the text message leaks a few weeks ago in terms of the Elon Musk trying to acquire Twitter is that they were looking at ways in which they can not only monetize the platform more now, which they're doing with blue checks, but also looking to turning Twitter into sort of an Asian style super app, which presumably would have some sort of payments or FS component to it as well.
So you're saying the richest guy in the world can't keep his texts secure either?
Who
I mean, none
knew?
of us have
Exactly.
any
Who
chance,
knew?
right?
We do not. Well, I think these are all part of they all came out as part of the discovery process for the lawsuit. So it's not
Oh,
like
okay. So they
they
had to
were
be
just leaked.
disclosed.
Yeah.
Got
Yes,
it.
yes, yes,
Okay,
yes.
got it, got it. Like Facebook has definitely been trying to go along this path with trying to get payments, and I know Mark Zuckerberg has been a fan of the Chinese super app kind of model, and for some reason he hasn't been able to make it work. Jack Dorsey, he obviously has a lot of payment experience with Square, and he hasn't gotten Twitter to be a payments platform. So I'm not sure what the if there's some compliance issue or something that's been holding this back that maybe Elon Musk doesn't know about. He hasn't hit that obstacle yet, but there must be something that's preventing that from getting built into into existing social media platforms. I mean, when the leaders have clearly said they want to be in that space.
Yeah, it's interesting because I wonder whether it's a matter of, as you say, some sort of regulation or some sort of obstacle that they can't quite overcome to get scale, or whether Elon, who's put a rocket on the moon, can actually do this, right? Or a rocket on Mars or whatever, or he's put a Tesla
he put a lot of rockets
in orbit.
Up there.
He put a lot of rockets. Yeah.
He
if he can put a Tesla in orbit, he can presumably have a payment system within Twitter. But who knows?
Yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, it's hard to argue. You don't know when someone's luck like that will run out. I mean, he's just been Babe Ruthing these industries since he's jumped in. It's hard to say no when he's been in there on this. So we'll see. I mean, obviously, he has thought about these things, these areas differently. And maybe that's what it'll take to get social media and payments to play together well. But
yeah,
there will be a regulatory aspect to this that maybe electric cars, rockets definitely do, but that electric cars don't have. So it might not be as clear.
The good news in that, though, is that from a regulation perspective, there actually was a recent executive order signed by Biden that actually provides a framework and guidance for all this stuff.
Yeah, right. Back in March, he signed an executive order to the financial regulators to kind of outline what the future regulations and what the government's direction should be with things like central bank digital currencies, priorities for future regulations around digital assets like financial inclusion, being climate conscious, not spewing a lot more carbon into the atmosphere. So things like Ethereum's switch to proof of stake would be welcome rather than Bitcoin, for example. Mm-hmm. Themes around equality, the importance of security. Guidance came out that from, I think it was from the Federal Reserve side, that they should investigate and continue looking at the issues around issuing central bank digital currency.
So should we actually go through these? It's only four of them, right? Four main pillars.
Yeah,
the
sure.
First one is, as you say, yeah.
Hit me up,
yeah.
Hit so me up.
All right. The first one is advanced work on a possible US CBDC, as you mentioned, in case one is determined to be in the national interest. So it seems like there is work in place now to build a US CBDC, which would have all sorts of interesting monetary and fiscal policy implications, right? But
and
at least we know that
one of the Fed governors, Lael Brainard, I think it's her district that's working with MIT right now on their initial proof of concept work. Yeah.
So they've got some big brain nerds working on this stuff now.
You need them.
Speaking of nerds, my favorite, encourage use of instant payment systems to support a more competitive, efficient, and inclusive U.S. payment landscape. So basically, push forward with instant payments.
Steve's favorite topic.
My favorite topic. It's amazing how, yes, you go anywhere else in the OECD world and you'll see this. Come back to the US, not so much now. But hopefully this happens somewhat soon.
Yeah, FedNow is supposed to be next year. So that's the system for real-time payments between the banking world and the Fed. And then that will lead into more rollouts over the next few years on all the features of FedNow or real-time.
Give me all
payments.
The features, please. Just give me all the features.
Yeah. Not so much on the consumer side, but yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah. On the consumer side, actually, recommendation number three, establish a federal framework for payments regulation to protect users and the financial system while supporting responsible innovations in payments.
Innovation.
Yeah. So basically have a federal framework for payments so that we know what everyone's doing. Everyone knows what the rules are. And also, if you do something that's shady or crazy or not allowed, you might get in trouble.
Yeah, that's the Zelle Payments Network has been getting criticism for all the fraud that's been running through. I think I saw something like there was, I don't know if it was just Zelle, but like $2.1 billion of fraudulent payments last year going through the banking network. I'm surprised it's that low, actually.
That is huge.
Zelle has been criticized because it doesn't have protections against fraud or being able. You would think, like, if you're doing it through your bank, they could like undo the payment or get them, retrieve the money back from fraudulent player or something like that, or from some scam. But that is absolutely not the case. I mean, you're pretty much in the same boat as if you used Venmo
Venmo or
or
PayPal,
anything
yeah.
else. Once it's gone, it's gone, and you don't have protections. And that the regulators have not been happy with that. So I think that's one of the issues that they're addressing there.
Oof, yeah, that certainly needs a lot of work. I tend to use Venmo more than Zelle, but I do find that Zelle security is pretty good. It's pretty good, at least in my experience. I have received a few text messages saying, "Hey, please lend me some money," but I'm I think anyone with half a brain cell can understand that that's likely spam and or phishing or something. It is not. It's
Yeah, I think
it's
some of
fraudulent.
the issue is like there's no undo button.
Yeah.
If they know it was fraud, if they find out it's fraud, not like, with a credit card, just to compare, if someone, misuses your card or it's just some fraud, I mean, you can get your money back and you're not on the hook for that. With Zelle, that's not the case. You've lost if that money goes, if you've been tricked. So that's
You
the
are
end of that.
SOL. You're
So I
SOL.
think
So,
that comparison doesn't look as good for something that's sponsored and run by the banks.
yeah. So we need both an undo button and also the edit button on Twitter. Boom.
And
Society
a,
solved.
yes, an instant do, but I also want to redo or
Yes.
undo. And all right, or else you're in some big doo-doo. All right, what's the next one?
All right. Number four. Prioritize efforts to improve cross-border payments, both to enhance payment system efficiency and protect national security.
Protect national security. I love it. It sounds
Yeah.
so grave, doesn't it?
It sounds extremely grave. Yeah, but it's basically how do we improve cross-border payments, which as we know, they're extremely expensive. I think just payments in general are just so broken now. I had to help my mother-in-law recently do a wire transfer for a house she's buying, and you have to go make an appointment at the
Oh, you've
bank.
heard about all the
They,
fraud, right?
oh, exactly. Oh, of course, yeah, like
The fake
title company
wire
fraud. It's
info.
it's awful.
Scary.
Yeah. So we and this is a huge amount. So we confirm with the title company and all that. Got the routing numbers, all the SWIFT codes and all that. But it's still a pain in the neck, and then actually have to go to a physical branch. You have to authenticate while you're in there, while you're at the branch with a banker. It takes forever. We needed to get it out to the title company by, I believe, 5 p.m. And they said if it's not in here by 11 o'clock, you're SOL. So it's just slow, expensive, cumbersome, and a pain in the neck to do as well. So
And
hopefully
risky and
the guy
scary.
and risky and scary, all the bad words, right? So I'm hoping that directives like these can essentially help streamline and improve the system. Although I'm not holding my breath.
Okay, all right. I just got a bill, a really big bill I have to pay, and it's with the city, and I'm afraid to pay it online now because I just read a bunch of these stories. I'm going to walk to City Hall, it's not that far,
Oh.
and make the payment, leave them a check because I'm just so afraid of a fake website or something like that, which is kind of unreasonable because it's a .gov, it should be okay, but it's so much money that I'm not going to chance it. I'm just going to walk over and make sure.
I would say that honestly, if it's over $1,000 and you can do it in person and it wouldn't be too burdensome, go ahead and do it in person.
I have, I'm unfortunately, it's over $1,000.
Yeah.
But it's that kind of fraud and the proliferation of so many like these title fraud interventions coming in, fake websites that look really like the real thing.
Yeah.
I can see that there's some issues to address there. So those are the issues that regulators are going to be looking for in the
Those
future of money.
are the four main pillars. Yeah.
Okay, got it. So I'll be keeping those in mind. Well, the future of money isn't just about new regulations. It's about new ways about thinking about things all over the world. And one place that's really trying to focus on the fintech innovation world is Hong Kong. Now, they've been taking some hits lately with some changes in governance. Apparently, there's a lot of efforts to kind of keep up in the fintech world.
So this is what one that it's actually it's this is a bit of a head scratcher. So essentially what they're saying is that they want Hong Kong to become a hub for digital assets. But a few things come up. So as you mentioned, right, they've gone through, let's say, some governance issues in the past few months. They're now under strict CCP control. But now they want to actually get into cryptocurrencies, which again is something that the CCP has been vocally against, right? So how do you how do those two things jive? How do you have the CCP saying we're going to ban mining in China, but also Hong Kong can become a quasi-independent crypto hub for East Asia?
So, what are they doing to become a fintech hub?
They're trying to attract investments. They're trying to build a really favorable regulatory framework and all that stuff.
Okay, so the environment. But yeah, I'm not sure if Xi Jinping, the king of China, is going to allow any competing digital assets, though.
Exactly. It's just, it strikes me as a bit odd that they have their own things as well, but they still want to create some sort of sandbox or some sort of regional powerhouse for all this.
Yeah, and they have some competition. Singapore has been really good at attracting investments and being very innovation friendly incentives for companies. I know a lot of famous innovators, like one of the co-founders of Facebook moved there to work on his digital currency project. So a lot of ideas coming out there. It feels like that's, is that the model they're trying to go for?
I'm guessing that's the case. Although again, with the political uncertainty, I would have a, you know, I'm assuming that they will have a difficult time attracting talent and funding for all this stuff, right? If you, if whatever you invest in can be confiscated, at the whim of the CCP, why would you ever invest in Hong Kong
Including
as a,
yourself
including yourself, right? You could
can
be
be
confiscated
confiscated.
personally.
Yep.
Why would you invest in having Hong Kong be the hub for all this stuff? It just makes no sense, John. I am at a loss.
Well, there's still definitely a big financial hub, less important these days than just recently. And Shanghai is certainly taken off as the mainland financial hub, but hard to tell what the future will be with Hong Kong. All right. Well, fintech funding is down, but definitely not out. Hopefully, some of the stronger players will continue to challenge the status quo, the incumbents, and come out with new, better ideas, because that's better for all of us. We'll be keeping an eye out and we'll see what Q4 has to hold. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news, and thank you for listening.